Hello, everybody. This is Doug Hagen. You're listening to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. And this week, I'm going to be talking about post-election fallout, what Republicans need to do to stick to their guns, stick to their promises, keep their spine straight, and move forward with undoing the damage the Obama agenda has done to this country, what voters need to do in regards to holding those Republicans' feet to the fire, what we're going to do about the rhino in the room, the establishment Republicans that just don't seem to get it yet, and what do Democrats have to do if they really care about this country? There's a lot more on this show. Keith Olbermann's in mucho trouble at MSNBS. You've got Nancy Pelosi on the delusional train. You've got Barack Obama's arrogance. And you've got some predictions. You've got some fun stuff. You got a musical interlude you're going to love. And all of that, my friends, all of that starts right now on Chimpsy Radio. Listening to the world's most dangerous cyber radio show on the world's most dangerous cyber radio network, Chimpsy Radio. Remember our Facebook page, my friends. You can go there and see what myself and all the other hosts are up to, what we're going to talk about on upcoming shows. And you can go to our chat room at Chimpsy Radio and you can interact with us. Most of us are there when the shows are playing. And we'll gladly have exchanges with you, take compliments, take criticism, take critiques. Without you, there will be no us. And without us, there will be not the full Republican revolution we need. Conservative revolution. Rhinos are not welcome. They are not allowed. This is a rhino-free zone, an RFZ, if you will. Now, the big news, obviously, is the election of November 2nd. 6 days ago, the Democrats did indeed receive the ass-kicking that everyone predicted they would get. And why did they get that? Well, the voters spoke. The voters repudiated the Obama-Pelosi-Reid agenda. They repudiated Alan Grayson and Charlie Crist, the ultimate rhino. They repudiated and rejected this idea that government has to be bigger and bigger, excuse me, and the government has to run our health care. We all rejected that at the polls on November 2nd. We were happy to do so. And the first thing I want to get to really isn't election related, but it's just so good to hear. The king of all media douchebags, Keith Olbermann, is in mucho trouble, my friends. He's been sent to the corner with a dunce cap on. MSNBS has suspended Keith Olbermann indefinitely. Today, after news broke that he had given the maximum allowable contribution to three Democrats without disclosing it to his viewers. Ooh, and one of those candidates actually was a guest on his show. CBS News reported on the suspension with a more detailed statement from the MSNBS brass.
I became aware of Keith's political contributions late last night.
Phil Griffin, president of MSNBC, said in a statement, "Mindful of NBC News policy and standards, I have suspended him indefinitely without pay." Oberman, who does not hide his liberal views, has acknowledged donations of $2,400 each to Kentucky Senate candidate Jack Conway, Arizona Representatives Paul Grijalva, and Gabrielle Giffords during this election cycle. NBC's ethics policy generally bars political activity, including contributions, without the approval of the president of NBC News, Steve Kappas, according to a 2007 story on MSNBC. Anyone working for NBC News who takes part in civic or other outside activities may find that these activities jeopardize his or her standing as an impartial journalist, because they may create the appearance of a conflict of interest, it says. Such activities may include participation in or contributions to political campaigns or groups that espouse controversial positions. You should report any such potential conflicts in advance to and obtain prior approval of the president of NBC News or his designee. So basically, what happened was that Keith Olbermann is being Keith Olbermann. This shouldn't surprise anybody. They contributed to Democratic campaigns. It's fine that he did, but he broke the rules. And as far as Keith Olbermann or anybody on MSNBC appearing fair and impartial, MSNBC, the brass there, should just forget that. They should have forgo that standard. They should just try to get people who appear sane and rational. And, well, they're falling short there. Matt Al, Schultz, Matthews, O'Donnell. I mean, these people are wackos. It's like a reality show in a psycho ward watching MSNBC. But let's get back to the election, why it happened. The media, as usual, is going to spin this. Democrats are going to spin these results, not as a repudiation of Obama and his agenda. No, no, no. They're going to spin that the president just didn't do a good enough job. Explaining his views to the stupid masses. You know, you've heard Bill Maher call you stupid. You've heard John Kerry call you stupid. Barack Obama has done it recently. I'll get to that in a minute. But this idea that somehow we just didn't get it, that the message didn't get out. No, 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 the message got out. The problem wasn't getting the message out, Democrats. The problem was the message, the methods. Shoving Obamacare down our throats, trying to shove cap and trade down our throats, shoving boondoggles like the stimulus down our throats. That was the problem. The problem was your agenda. It sucks. It sucks like a $2 hooker on Saturday night. That's how bad your agenda sucks. Now let's get to the president's arrogance. And hey, if anyone knows arrogance, it's Mayor Nanny Bloomberg of New York, the world's little Marxist. He apparently said of Obama that he never met in my life such an arrogant man. ABC News reports that during President Obama's vacation at Martha's Vineyard on August 27th, he took in a round of golf at Vineyard Golf Club in Edgartown, playing golf with New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Democratic lawyer, businessman, and Clinton crony Vernon Jordan, I guess he's out of prison now, and White House trip director and former golf pro Marvin Nicholson. They actually have a White House trip director. He's in charge of taking Michelle Obama to all the ugly dress shops around the country to make sure she has all the latest ugly dresses and muumuus. The pool report at the time said that we are told Bloomberg and Obama talked in the clubhouse for about 15 minutes about the economy. They then went to the driving range and made out. No, actually, they didn't make out. Not a mental image I needed anyway. But they did go to the driving range. And apparently, at least from a second-hand report, the Obama-Bloomberg convo could have gone, shall we say, better. In an interview with the Australian Financial Review, conservative media magnate Rupert Murdoch says Bloomberg said it was a pleasant day. In conversation, he put a few ideas. He said it was like verbal ping pong. Bloomberg, according to Murdoch, came back and said, "I never met in my life such an arrogant man." Apparently, only when he looks in a mirror does he meet such an arrogant man. Because Bloomberg's an asshat. There's no doubt about it. He's an arrogant little bastard. And here's Obama, who Bloomberg labels an arrogant man. And look, they're on the same page on most things. Bloomberg and Obama could be joined at the hip. So we know Obama's elite. Hell, Chris Matthews even called him elitist the other night. Disconnected from the people. Here's something from my blogging role model, Michelle Malkin. She wrote just a couple days ago about the Democrats and this idea of an olive branch and reaching out. And she touched on Barack Obama's arrogance, probably the number one reason for the shellacking he got. On a 60 Minutes interview, Barack Obama, after suffering a shellacking in the midterm elections, acknowledged what many have seen as his chief weakness. Here's the media spin: failing to sell the importance of several legislative milestones to the American people. I think that's a fair argument. I think that over the course of 2 years, we were so busy and so focused on getting a bunch of stuff done that we stopped paying attention to the fact that leadership isn't just legislation, that it's a matter of persuading people and giving them confidence and bringing them together and setting a tone, President Obama told 60 Minutes Steve Croft. Making an argument that people can understand. Did you hear that, my friends? You're too stupid to understand. You're too damn stupid and ignorant to get it. You didn't get the message. You don't understand how great this man is. You don't understand how noble he is. You don't understand that he is a second coming. He is the Obamasiah. You just don't get it, do you? I think that we haven't always been successful at that, Obama said, and I take personal responsibility for that, and it's something I've got to, well, examine carefully as I go forward. Keep thinking that, President Obama. You know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly, expecting different results. The Democrats, leftists like Obama, it just doesn't get it. His ideals don't work, so what's he do? He does them again and again and again and again. When something doesn't work, when the American people reject something, and look, the Tea Party was very informed, very well informed, despite the media smears. The fact is that the American people get it. We get it. The Tea Party gets it. We know what you're trying to do, President Obama. And frankly, we understand. We understand very well what you were trying to do. And what you did, it against the will of the people. Pelosi, Reid, the Democrats, they did it against the will of the people, and they did it gleefully. You know, you never forget that image of the day Obamacare was passed, Nancy Pelosi with her gavel. Just the look on her face of just incredible euphoria, because she was screwing the American people and they couldn't do a damn thing about it. Well, that gavel won't be in Nancy Pelosi's hands for long. It will be in the hands of John Boehner, a man of integrity, honor, and principles. And he will be a great Speaker of the House, I think. And you know what else, folks? You have to understand something here. You have to understand, as we the media can do whatever it wants, say whatever it wants, spin whatever it wants. We know why Democrats were rejected. We understand why. And you know what else, folks? Michelle Malkin, going back to her for a second, there's a reason she's my blogging role model. She's good. She's damn good at what she does. And she's got some more on the arrogance of not just Obama, but the entire administration, the entire elitist, elevated nostrils of the Democrats, saying nasty things about the Tea Partiers, about conservatives, about you. calling us Neanderthals, saying we had to be drugged into the next century like Bill Maher did, said that, like Jeanine Garofalo, that we were mentally disturbed, racist rednecks, teabaggers, blah, blah, blah. Malkin writes at her blog, appropriate name, MichelleMalkin.com, on the eve of a historic midterm election upheaval, President Barack Obama tried to walk back his gratuitous slap at Americans who oppose his radical progressive agenda. I probably should have used the word opponents instead of enemies to describe political adversaries, Obama admitted Monday. Probably. Here's an ironclad certainty. It's too little too late for the antagonist-in-chief to paper over 2 years of relentless Democratic incivility and hate towards the domestic enemies. Voters have spoken. They've had enough. Enough of the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize winner, rhetorical abuse, enough of his feints at bipartisanship. Whatever the final tally, this week's turnover in Congress is a GOP mandate for legislative pugilism, not peace. Voters have had enough of big government. Meddlers getting things done. They are sending fresh blood to the nation's capital to get things undone. That's a key point, and I'll get to some statements by Representative Mike Pence, absolutely phenomenal statements he had concerning this whole deal about should Republicans and other media spin. You're going to hear this repeatedly. Oh, should we reach out to the president? Should they reach out? When are they going to reach out to the president? When are they going to get things done? When are they going to stop being bitter and start being bipartisan? All media BS spin. I also fully expect to hear as a prediction that before these new Republicans are even sworn into office in January, you're going to start seeing the media report on the economy. If the economy doesn't dramatically improve soon, doesn't begin to step up, you're going to hear them start blaming Republicans. I guarantee you that. I know it's coming. You know it's coming. We'll see what happens. I predict it'll happen even before. That they take office. We know the Democrats are going to start doing it, of course. Back to Malkin's newest column. Just 2 short years ago, Obama campaigned as the transcendent unifier. Young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled, and not disabled. Americans have sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of red states and blue states. We have been and always will be the United States of America. That sounds great, doesn't it? That flowing rhetoric. Man, that teleprompter was on its game that day. It's been us versus them free fall ever since, Malkin writes. We don't mind Republicans joining us, Obama taunted a few weeks ago. They can come for the ride, but they got to sit in back. Wow. Doesn't that have racial overtones? But wait, there's more racial overtones. They're counting on young people staying home and union members staying home and black folks staying home. The fear-mongering agent of hope and change jeered on the campaign trail last month. Play that race card one more time, Obama. Your bitterness, your elitism, your race card throwing, your Marxist fringe, your Marxist policies, that's why you got the shellacking. Are you really this stupid, President Obama? I know you're not the brightest guy in the world. I know a lot of people, oh, you're a brilliant man. He's a constitutional scholar. The guy is an idiot. Anyone who still thinks the Marxist principles that Obama clings to work is mentally challenged. Okay, let's just be honest about it. You don't have all your marbles clicking around up there like you should. Sorry, that's just the way it is. Back to some of Obama's unifying statements. You would think they'd be saying thank you, he sneered last April, when millions turned out for the nationwide tax day Tea Party protest. Thank you for what? Raising taxes? Growing the deficit more than it's ever grown in the history of this country combined? Shoving Obamacare down our throats? Should we thank you for that? Trying to shove cap and trade down our throats? Wasteful stimulus packages, lying to us repeatedly. Obamacare has to get done, has to save lives. Won't take effect for 3 or 4 years, but it's got to save lives. I want them to just get out of the way and don't do a lot of talking. Remember that from Obama? He scoffed in response to prescient critics of the federal $1 trillion stimulus boondoggle. In addition to labeling GOP opponents of his open borders policies enemies, who need to be punished by Latino voters, Obama accused them, that is us, Malkin writes, of lacking patriotism. Those aren't the kind of folks who represent our core American values, he told viewers of the Spanish language network Univision. And again, this isn't just Obama that's done this. Harry Reid did it. Pelosi did it, called us dangerous. This administration, the Congress, Democratic-controlled Congress, Democratic-controlled Senate and House, Democratic-controlled White House, they did their damnedest to slime you, slander you, slur you, demonize you, radicalize you, minimalize you, marginalize you. Tea parties, just a bunch of teabagging rednecks. They played that arrogance card over and over and over and over and over. And guess what? What did it get them? Nothing. It got them some legislation they wanted, they've dreamed about for years. And now it's got them a shellacking, as the president said. It got them kicked the hell out of office. And that is a great thing. But you know what? It's only a first step. And this idea about Democrats, Republicans, working with Democrats, that's not what we need, folks. We don't need to work with the Democrats. They need to work with us. Their ideals have been rejected. They've been repudiated. They have been kicked back to them. The American people don't want it. American people, one poll I saw recently, 70% want Obamacare repealed. That means they don't like the bill. They still don't like it. I know Bill Maher thinks we're stupid. We're just too stupid to understand the bill. That's why we don't understand it and don't, well, we don't like it because we're stupid dogs and don't understand. Fact is, we know it's in the bill. That's why we don't like it. That's why we want it kicked back. That's why we want it repealed. And I don't know if Republicans will be able to. Certainly, with just controlling the House, they won't be able to repeal it. The Senate is still controlled close margin, much closer margin by Democrats. And I guess it's possible that the Senate, there's enough Democrats there would be scared enough for their political futures that they because a lot of senators are going to be running for re-election in 2012, a greater proportion than was this time. So there's a certain number of Democrats here that might be persuaded. But even if it gets to the House, which it will, and the Senate, then it's got to be assigned, obviously, by the President. President Obama won't do that. But that's a good thing. Make him look at the American people one more time. Make Senate Democrats do it one more time. Make House Democrats do one more time. And make the President one more time look at the American people in the eye and say, screw you, we don't care what you want. You're going to have this bill whether you like it or not. That arrogance is what cost them this election. That arrogance caused the House landslide. That arrogance caused Republicans to take more seats in more state legislatures across this great country than ever before. Over 700, I believe, is the number. That arrogance, make them do it again. Make them be arrogant again. Make them do it again. You know, that's the best thing that happened to us is they continue to be Democrats. Democrats lost because they were Democrats. And these Republicans that won elections, guess what? Guess what? They won because they were acting like Republicans, not rhinos, but Republicans. Make them do what we know they really want to do. Be radical. Make them keep that arrogant tone. Make them look the American people in the eye and say, tough luck. We don't care what you want. We don't care what our constituents want. We don't care what the Constitution says. We know best. We want to be your mommy and your daddy, and you're going to sit in a corner and take what we give you and like it. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi will soon no longer be Speaker of the House, obviously, but she's going to run for, I guess, the House Minority leadership. And I think that's great. I want Nancy Pelosi's face. I want that blob of Botox front and center. I want her arrogant tone, her condescending sneer. I want her to be the face of the Democratic Party as much as Obama and Reid are. Keep coming. Keep it coming. Keep her in leadership. Put her on TV every day. Let the American people see and smell the arrogance coming from that woman. Please keep Pelosi. And for the Republicans, I hear Michelle Bachmann may run for a leadership position, and she should get it. No reason she shouldn't. There will be those rhinos and those establishment pragmatic Republicans that say, well, she's too radical. She'll make us look bad. Baloney. She's an attractive woman, smart woman, very articulate woman. Doesn't need a teleprompter to be articulate, by the way. And you know, she's one of the leaders of this whole Tea Party thing, and she has been a great, great, great role model for young Republicans, young conservatives. And she does deserve a leadership position. I think the more the American people see of Michelle Bachmann and hear from Michelle Bachmann, free of the media filtering, media spin, they're going to like her more and more. The same goes for Sarah Palin. And there's a lot of these Republicans that post-election are well, they're looking to 2012, obviously, already strategizing. But there seems to be this block that doesn't want Palin to be the nominee in 2012. I don't know who I'm going to back in 2012. I know I like Jim DeMint a lot. I hope he runs. There's other people that may run in the future. But I don't mind Mitt Romney at all. I have no use for Huckabee. He's a phony. But Palin's one of those people that would be on my short list right now. And she may not be my pick in 2012. But I think the more the people get to know Palin, you know, she's got this reality show coming up on one of the cable networks, Sarah Palin's Alaska or something it's called. And I think Karl Rove was criticizing that. Maybe it was Newt Gingrich. That it wasn't a good idea. That, you know, look, I think the more the people get to see Sarah Palin, hear from Sarah Palin, and observe how she is, I think her popularity will rise. There was a recent poll, and I hate these polls predicting presidential elections 2 years before they happen. But it had Huckabee beating Obama, it had Romney beating Obama, it had Gingrich losing to Obama narrowly, and it had Palin losing to Obama. That's so far out, it's not even worth looking at, really. But some people obsess over polls, even when they obviously don't matter. But I think the popularity of Palin will rise. I think this idea that a lot of people have been sold by Democrats and me that she's stupid, she's a Barbie doll, she's a bimbo, basically doesn't know what she's doing. I think her personality, her wit, her charm, her good looks, all that, can really begin to change. And I think she could be a very good nominee in 2012. We'll see. That's in the future. But Sarah Palin's a very important part of the Republican Party. And we need to remember that. And we need to remember that the same types of Republicans who didn't want Reagan to run, he's too radical, he's too conservative, didn't like Fred Thompson at all and helped to hurt his chances in 2008, when he was clearly the most conservative candidate running, we know they're the same types who don't want Palin running. We know what Reagan did, and I think Thompson could have been a great president, frankly, because he had a lot of those same qualities. He's not a bullshit kind of guy. He's more straightforward. And I think Palin has a lot of similarities, and definitely her opponents have that mentality of we can't go too far to the right. We've got to stay in the middle. You can't be ourselves. We can't stand on principle. And I'll tell you this, if Republicans that are newly sworn in January don't stand on their principles, they're done. The Republican Party will lose what it's gained, and it will lose incredible amounts of credibility. And we're just starting to get that credibility back. We're just starting to regain that credibility. As Marco Rubio said, his acceptance speech, winning the Senate seat in Florida, once held by Mel Martinez, he beat the hell out of Charlie Crist, by the way. Just pounded him into dust, by the way. And we'll get to that here after our musical interlude is coming up. Great song for you. You're going to want to get up and dance. You will want to get up and dance, I guarantee you. If you don't, there's something wrong with you. You're probably a Democrat still suffering from post-election trauma syndrome. Pets, is that what that's called? I just made up a disease. I could be a psychiatrist or a psychologist or one of those psycho people that analyzes other people's brains. I could be that. Anyway, it's going to be very interesting going forward. And you got to stand on principle. Republicans, I'm going to have some advice for you. Mike Pence has some words. Michelle Mauchin will have some stuff I've got. And Jim DeMint may have the ultimate advice for young conservative Republicans like Alan West and Marco Rubio and Mike Scott in South Carolina that are going into Congress or into the Senate about earmarks, about pork barrel spending, about not playing political games, and about not selling out your principles. Great stuff ahead. And right now, time for a little music. Take a little break, drink me a little diet soda, get my throat back where it should be. Let It Roll by Little Feat. Just one of my favorite all-time songs. This song just makes me want to get up and have a good time. Enjoy, my friends. I'll be back.
Rolling down Highway 95, sailing through a hometown countryside. I move on over, stay inside my cruise control and overdrive. Need to take my baby for a ride. Ooh, she's like a smooth stretch of highway.
you go, my friends. Let It Roll, Little Feet. Phenomenal song. You can sit down now. Stop dancing around. But back to this post-election wrap-up. And there's a story out of North Carolina that needs to be told. And Bob Belvedere, the Camp of the Saints blog, one of my blogging friends, has a piece up. And there's a blog called Not One Red Cent. It was founded by Robert Stacy McCain of The Other McCain, another great blog. And basically, it was in response to the National Republican Senatorial Committee trying to get Marco Rubio to sit down, shut up, and just let the all-knowing Republican elites run the show. The voters don't need to speak in the Republican primary. Just take Crist. He's the governor of Florida. He's a Republican. He's going to be our guy to keep the seat of in the Senate of that Mel Martinez held. But the funny thing was that Rubio, who was the Speaker of the Florida House at the time, very popular among conservatives, far more conservative than Charlie Crist, he wanted to run, and the people spoke. And this blog was ended up, of course, winning the Senate seat. And when it became clear that Crist wasn't going to get the Republican nomination, what did this all-time great Republican do? What did this Reagan Republican do? What was this indispensable Republican? What did he do? He turned into the ultimate political porn star. Screw anybody, take any position to hold on to his precious political power. He didn't care about Republicans or conservatism. In fact, as soon as he became an independent, left the party and entered the race, knowing that the only thing he would possibly do by doing so would be to screw Rubio and the Republicans out of the seat. What did he do? Well, he scrubbed all the conservative content from his website. Basically, he began calling Tea Partiers and Sarah Palin and Marco Rubio extremists. Said he was going to caucus with Democrats. Said he was always going to leave the party because we'd just become too damn extreme for Charlie Crist. Charlie Crist is a bottom-feeding piece of trash, frankly. He gives politicians a bad name. He gives bad politicians a bad name. No credibility, no integrity, no character, nothing but screw you, it's all about me. And that, as much as anything else, is what this election was about. Getting rid of rhinos like that. Getting rid of politicians that just are out for themselves. They don't care about their constituents. They don't care about any. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about the rule of law. They care about having things their way, and the people should sit down, shut up, if they know what's good for them. Because we know these Democrats and liberals and scumbags like Charlie Crist, we know that they know what's best for us. And it goes back to things like the New York 23rd Congressional District race, where you had Doug Hoffman, who was a conservative, wasn't a Republican, but he was very conservative, was running for that seat. A lot of the bloggers got behind him. The bloggers at Not One Red Cent obviously got behind him. He was running against a Democrat, and Dede Scozzafava, who's the Republican. And she was establishment Republican. She was a rhino. She wasn't conservative at all. And here comes Newt Gingrich, who, you know, Newt Gingrich has said and done some good things, but good Lord, the man grates on my nerves. If he runs for president, to me, he's a party over principle guy, and we don't need that. We need principles. This party will fail, it will implode, it will not be as successful as it can be if we don't have principles before party. If these Republicans who are going to the Senate surrender their principles to help the betterment of the party, you know what that gets you? That gets you Charlie Crist in the U.S. Senate right now. As a Republican, sure, but not Marco Rubio. That gets you Dede Scozzafava, who as soon as she saw in a three-way race she wasn't going to win, she dropped out, endorsed the Democrat, and helped the real conservative Doug Hoffman, who was going to caucus with House Republicans, by the way, out of there and gave the seat to a Democrat. It's pathetic. And Newt Gingrich was, you know, stay out of it. This is local politics. It's not national race. Well, yeah, the House members vote on national issues, Newt. And he was wrong on that. And that's why I think Karl Rove, and not that impressed by him either. And Newt just seems like a guy with not a lot of character, frankly, some of his personal things. I just don't like the guy. I think he's got a lot of great ideas, a lot of conservative ideas, but I think principles take a backseat to party for him. And I know you have to win elections to accomplish anything, right? That's true. But if you win elections with people who won't accomplish anything, you won't accomplish anything anyway. It's like in Delaware. You know, people have been critical because Christine O'Donnell wasn't the best candidate. Yeah, she wasn't the best candidate. But Mike Castle, the establishment Republican, what was he? Another Charlie Crist in waiting? Another Didi Scalzo-Fava in waiting? He didn't really act as he should have. Again, the Republican voters of Delaware voted in the primary. They voted for O'Donnell. And the Republican leadership needs to understand that they're not the Republican Party. The Republicans, like you and me and everyone else who's registered Republican, we're the party, not the leadership. They need to listen more, and they need to embrace the fact that just as in America, the power lies with the people ultimately, so it is with the Republican Party. I don't like Republican elites anymore than I like any other kind of elite. I don't like elites, period. You can take your country club Republicanism and stick it, frankly. But back to what Bob Belvedere is writing about the situation in North Carolina. Belvedere writes that, "I am convinced that the Not One Red Cent campaign, run by Stacey McCain, Smitty, Pat Austin, Doug Hagan, Dave C., Richard McEnroe, Carol of Carol's Closet, and Paco, of Paco Enterprises, contributed a great deal to the victories we achieved on the 2nd of November. Thousands of folks heeded the Wolverine call of founder Stacey McCain in May of 2009. And McCain wrote at that time, "Fight back against the national GOP leadership's betrayal of conservative grassroots." Great statement, simple, short, to the point, and completely accurate. And we still have this issue with the establishment pragmatic Republicans. And we've got to get those rhinos out of the room so we can move forward and do the real work. Because frankly, I think the establishment Republicans are too concerned about being maverick, about being, about retaining their number in the pecking order, rather than really fighting for conservative values and causes. They're too pragmatic. Look, you have to win, yes, but you know what? A lot of the candidates that won didn't get the support of the Republican establishment. Belvedere continues, "We gave our money directly to the candidates who pledged to lead the fight to restore our freedoms and liberties. And we rejected the overlordship of the feudal barons who make up the GOP establishment. Out of this rebellious seed, many flowers bloom, most especially and successfully the 10 Buck Friday campaign." That was blogs putting up a list of candidates running, conservative candidates running for different offices, and asking people to throw in 10 bucks to their favorites campaign. "Also, an attitude permeated the writer's fear that we, the grassroots, could force a desiccated and moribund Republican Party to listen and heed us. And we did. Even with the victory of 2nd of November, the battle rages on. Witness this abomination, as reported by Stacey McCain." There's a lady, Renee Elmers. She ran for a House seat in North Carolina, and she beat Bob Etheridge, the Democrat. But now Etheridge is threatening a recount. We know how those Democratic recounts work, like in Minnesota with Franken, with, you know, mystery votes coming up, and Patty Murray in Washington, and dead people voting, and, you know, we know how Democrats have recounts. We remember Al Gore shenanigans in 2000. But McCain writes that the GOP won the House as some kind of miracle, considering the total ineptitude of Pete Sessions and his crew of bumbling dingbats at the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Committee. Renee Elmers beat Bob Etheridge in North Carolina. Now the Democrat is asking for a recount. And Elmers has gone public with the fact that the NRCC is MIA. Elmers writes, Months ago, I went to Washington and asked the NRCC and many conservative leaders to help my campaign. Many conservative groups, like the Susan B. Anthony List, Concerned Women for America, FreedomWorks, and Sarah Palin's Sarah PAC, all helped. But the NRCC declined. Later, they did support other campaigns in North Carolina, which unfortunately lost, but we never received their support. In fact, their spokesman told the press that the campaign wasn't ready for prime time, which actually made it even harder for us to raise money. So I'm doubtful we will get the support from the NRCC to help with the expense of this recount. Now, the NRCC is going to kick in, I believe it's $10,000. But get that statement, they're not ready for prime time. We're going to back these other candidates. All those candidates lost. The geniuses, the establishment Republicans, are so pragmatic and wise. And they failed to back a winner. Because she wasn't establishment. She wasn't willing to play along. That's a huge problem for this party. We've got to get the rhino out of the room, as I did a podcast earlier this past week about that. And it's centered on a fight between Jim DeMint and the Lindsey Graham, Lindsey Lohan of the Republican Party, Lindsey Graham and Trent Lott and some other establishment Republicans. And I want to hear first, before I get into that, what Representative Mike Pence said to about Democrats and Republicans working together. Pence said they don't want that. The American people, the voters, want Republicans who get things undone. Great words from Mike Pence, possible presidential candidate, and I would not have a problem with that at all. Pence said, "I'm going to ensure that Republicans come out of the gate and seize this moment. We've really been given a second chance at a first impression, and I'm going to tell them that we have to rise to the challenge with principle and conviction, and not with this attitude that you saw coming from the White House yesterday and from some other quarters on the establishment left in Washington, which was that somehow the message of this election was that they want Democrats and Republicans to work better together to get along." Good heavens, Tuesday wasn't about getting things done, it was about getting things undone. That's exactly right. Stick to your guns, stick to your principles, do not surrender them. We have to understand this, folks. You young Republicans coming into office, stick to your principles, do not sell them out. You will not be reelected, you will not have success, you will not get the things done we need to get done, and you won't be serving your constituents. Do not fall into that trap that the Democrats and the media want you to fall into. Before I get to Jim DeMint's advice for these young Republicans, let me give you some pieces of advice. Number one, the media is not your friend. They do not want you to succeed. They do not want you to flourish. They want you to fail and get kicked out of office. They want to elect liberal Democrats. They're not your friends. They're not going to spin in your favor. They're going to spin against you. They're not going to report you accurately. They're going to spin against you. Sucking up to the media won't do you any good. Take your case directly to the people. Take your case directly to your constituents, to the American people. The media isn't going to help you like they help Democrats. Lesson number two, the Democrats who come and put their arm around you and say, "Hey, buddy, how you doing? Welcome to Washington." They're not your friends either. They're your enemies, your political enemies. Doesn't mean you're going to have shootouts in the halls of Congress. It means they don't like you. They don't want you to succeed. Their agenda is the polar opposite of your agenda. They're going to do everything they can to trip you up, make you fail, make you fall flat on your face, and make you a loser when you run for re-election. Don't fall for that. The media ain't your friend. The Democrats ain't your friends. You have the mandate, they don't. You won the election, they didn't. The people, your constituents, the American people, are looking to you, not to them, to be leaders and to get things done, or, as Mike Pence properly put it, undone. It's time to dispense with the get along, let's all hug it out stuff. No, this is political fight. This is, as Michelle Malkin put it, political pugilism. And you've got to box their ears in before they box your ears in. The best way to do it, stick to your principles. There's two rules I have that all congressmen, all senators should follow, all of them. Number one, first and foremost, before anything else, before you put forth a bill, before you put your name on a bill, before you sponsor a bill, before you campaign or vote for a bill, read it. And make sure that it is constitutional. Oh, and one more thing. Make sure the bill is short enough that it can be read in under a year and a half. These boondoggle bills, these what is the word I'm looking for? This all-encompassing bill that can do everything for every... comprehensive. If the bill is comprehensive, it's too long. Rewrite it. Make it shorter. Demand it be shorter. Remove the crap and the pork from it. Read the bill. Make sure it's constitutional. If it ain't constitutional, I don't care. If one provision in it is unconstitutional and you can't get that provision removed, don't vote for the bill. Principles over anything else. Over anything else. Screw pragmatism. Principles trump pragmatism. Principles trump party. Number two, you have a boss. It's called your constituents. If the bill is constitutional, it does pass constitutional muster in your humble opinion, fine. But if your constituents do not want it, do not vote for it. Listen to them. They hired you. They can fire you. If you don't think they can't fire you, ask a lot of Democrats today if they can be fired by their constituents. It's happened before. It will happen again. It will happen to you. Don't fall for that. Principles over pragmatism, over party, your constitution, your constituents, they come first. In fact, those are your only two real duties you have to serve. Follow the Constitution, listen to your constituents. Constitution number one, constituents number two. Now, Senator Jim DeMint had some great advice. He wrote a column in the Wall Street Journal, and he was welcoming these new Senate Republicans in. And here's what DeMint writes. Congratulations to all the Tea Party-backed candidates who overcame a determined partisan opposition to win their elections. The next campaign begins today, because you must now overcome determined party insiders if this nation is going to be spared from fiscal disaster. Now, he's talking about Republican insiders, as you'll see in a minute. Many of the people who will be welcoming you, the new class of Senate conservatives to Washington, never wanted you here in the first place. The establishment is much more likely to try and buy off your votes than to buy into your limited government philosophy. Consider what former GOP senator turned lobbyist Trent Lott told the Washington Post earlier this year. As soon as they get here, we need to co-opt them. DeMint advises, don't let them. Co-option is coercion. Washington operates on a favor-based economy, and for every earmark, every committee assignment or fancy title that's given, payback is expected in return. The chits come due when the roll call votes begin. This is how big spending bills that everyone always decries in public always manage to pass with just enough votes. But someone can't be bribed if they aren't for sale. Here is some humble advice on how to recognize and refuse such offers. First, don't request earmarks. If you do, you'll vote for legislation based on what's in it for you and your state rather than what's best for the country. You will lose the ability to criticize wasteful spending, and if you dare to oppose other pork barrel projects, the earmarkers, will retaliate against you. In 2005, Senator Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma, offered a measure to kill funding for the infamous Bridge to Nowhere. Before the vote, Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, an appropriator, issued a warning on the Senate floor. If we start cutting funding for individual projects, your project may be next, she said. When members come down to the floor to vote on this amendment, they need to know if they support stripping out this project. Senator Bond, a Republican appropriator at the time, and I are likely to be taking a long, serious look at their projects to determine whether they should be preserved during our upcoming conference negotiation. DeMint writes that the threat worked. Hardly anyone wanted to risk losing earmarks. The Senate voted 82-15 to protect funding for the Bridge to Nowhere. 82 out of 97 voted for that boondoggle idiotic funding because they didn't want their funding cut. It was about the money. The Mint goes on to advise them to hire conservative staff. Beware of committees. Committee assignments can be used as bait to make senators compromise on other matters. Rookie senators are often told they must be a member of a particular committee to advance a certain piece of legislation. This may be true in the House, but a senator can legislate on any matter from the Senate floor. Fourth, don't seek titles. The word senator before your name carries plenty of clout. All senators have the power to object to bad legislation, speak on the floor, and offer amendments, regardless of how they are ranked in party hierarchy. Lastly, don't let your re-election become more important than your job. You've campaigned long and hard for the opportunity to go to Washington and restore freedom in America. People will try to convince you to moderate conservative positions and break campaign promises, all in the name of winning the next race. Resist the temptation to do so. There are worse things than losing elections, like breaking your word to voters. Thank you, Senator Mitt. Well said. You want to know why I want this guy to run for president? That's why. No bullshit, no spin, straight up honest integrity and honesty. Just tell it like it is, Senator Mitt. We need more of that. I've given my advice to these Republicans. Senator Mitt has given tremendous advice. And it comes down to one word. I mean, if I could advise all these incoming Republicans to write one word on the inside of their eyelids, so every time they blink, they see it, it would be principles. You were elected for a reason. Stick to your principles. Do not surrender them. Do not cower. Fight. You were sent to fight for this country, to fight to return to the founding principles. Do so. You promised to do so. Now do it. Don't listen to your enemies. Don't listen to your political opponents. Don't listen to the pragmatists. If it was up to the pragmatists, you wouldn't even have been elected. You wouldn't have been running. You would have been sitting drinking coffee at Denny's or something. If you're lucky, drinking coffee at IHOP. But remember, your Constitution, your constituents, principles. I know it sounds pretty simple, and frankly, it probably is pretty simple. You just have to resist the temptations. They say that power can corrupt. Don't be corrupted. Don't fall into that trap. Don't think the media is your friend. Don't think Democrats are your friend. Your constituents who hired you are the only people you need to worry about, their opinion. Do what's best for this country. Do what's best for your, for the Constitution. Because without the Constitution, there is no America. My friends, that is it for me. My voice is starting to get scratchy. Not enough Diet Sierra Mist to lubricate the vocal cords, I guess. Love doing this show. Remember my blog, thedailygator.wordpress.com. I host that with Edward Daly. Remember Not One Red Cent. That blog. Remember the Facebook page for Chimpsy Radio. Remember, you can hear what all the hosts are going to talk about and see what's coming up. And come talk to us. Communicate with us. Comment. Listen to our shows, and we'll probably be there. And you can bust our chops or pat us on the back, whichever you prefer. Again, without you, there is no us. And without us, the Republican Revolution, the Conservative Revolution, will lose a bit of its luster. Folks, you did a good thing on November 2nd. Now the next step is holding the feet of these candidates, now newly elected senators and House members, to the fire. Keep the skier on. Keep it on them. And if they can't do the job, we'll elect somebody next time that will. Stay active. Don't rest on your laurels. Keep up the fight. Keep up the energy. Remember, your country's at stake, your children, your grandchildren, their future is at stake. That's too big a price to pay for being politically lazy. Don't do it, my friends. I am Doug Hagan. You've been listening to If You're Left, You Just Ain't Right. And one more thing, as always, go Gators. Good night, everybody. Talk to y'all next week.